Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
One of the most famous world travelers of any age was Barry Lopez, the explorer and writer who passed away in 2020. Lopez went everywhere, from the North to the South Pole, across every continent, through 70 countries. And his writing, so vivid and sensory, you could practically see the Arctic ice fields, smell the walrus and muskox. We wanted to remember him by revisiting Steve Paulson's interview with Lopez about his memoir called Horizon.
I have to say, this book is so fascinating for all kinds of reasons. And for one thing, it's an autobiography told through your experiences of travel.
Right.
Why has travel been so central to your life?
I really don't know, Steve. I went back and tried to mine my own history to see if I could find any hints of why I leave home so often, asking myself, what are you running from? And I remembered being a 3-year-old boy out in the water of Mamaroneck Sound, which is just an embayment of Long Island Sound, and feeling that I desperately wanted to go further out in the water, but I couldn't swim. And that emotion, that longing, that great yearning to see a world other than my own, It never abated.
You've traveled to a lot of places where you have had experiences with traditional people in northern Canada, Africa, Australia. And my sense is that these have often been very profound experiences for you.
Oh, yeah.
Why have you sought out these encounters?
Well, how many times have you met somebody who says 1 and 1 equals 2? And then how many times have you met a person who said 1 and 1 equals 3? And they were deeply serious, and you sensed they were right in their world. So if you travel and you encounter different ways of knowing the world, it makes you suspicious of every authoritarian personality, whether they're political or religious or scientific, who says this is the way the world works. I don't believe anyone understands the way the world works. And if you immerse yourself in these sometimes uncomfortable or bewildering circumstances often enough, it takes some of the arrogance out of you. And once arrogance is diminished in you, you really can learn a lot.
Well, you have a passage early in the book that gets at exactly what you've just been talking about. I'd love to have you read that.
Sure. When, in 1979, I encountered a traditional group of people for the first time on their home ground at a small Nunamiut Eskimo village called Anaktuvuk Pass in Alaska's Brooks Range, I had among my first thoughts an obvious question. Why did I know so little about these people? I didn't mean knowledge about their material culture, or their hunting techniques, the way they were able to survive in the harsh landscape they'd chosen to live in, but about the way they understood the world. What did they find mysterious, but still worthy of their full attention? Were the difficulties and paradoxes of leading a just life the same for them as they were for me? Why was it never mentioned in the good schools I attended that such people saw as deeply into the physical world as the Greek philosophers we were asked to read?
That passage raises the question of whether we, living in what you call indoor culture, can ever really understand outdoor people who have entirely different forms of knowledge.
They have different forms of knowledge, but they have the same skill set, if you will, that we do. One of the most painful things I ever went through was when I was having dinner with a good friend, and he said, you know, I really can't understand how or why you do this, spend so much time with people who are really not very sophisticated and certainly not intellectual. I was so stunned by the remark because I considered him a good friend and a sophisticated man, but he wasn't. The fact is, if you're in a society in which the stability of the group is the paramount thing and not the success of the individual, you get a very different idea about how to take care of yourself and others. And for me, that's what's missing now. I would say American culture is neurotically focused on the individual, and people strive to be different or people strive to be interesting. And what is that for?
Yeah. So I want to come back to some of your own experiences, some of your own encounters, particularly with traditional people, and some of the ethical questions that you have to deal with. I mean, for instance, you've written about how Eskimos are generally not comfortable with you as a white man writing stuff down in your notebook as you're hanging out with them, let's say after a hunt.
Right.
But
right.
You are a writer by profession. This is what you do. So how do you deal with that tension?
Well, in that instance, I was traveling, we were hunting narwhal in northern Canada, and there were maybe 12 men and a couple of young Inuit boys, and myself and another white man. I was his friend, and he was my mediator and guide. When I'm working, I often keep a little notebook in my shirt pocket so that I can quickly write down a couple of words that I know will help me recall later the larger incident. So I was doing that on this trip, and my friend Carrie said, "Put that away." As soon as he said it, I realized, oh, what was I thinking? And after that, I just made sure that when I was writing notes down, I did it in my tent where no one would see me. They've opened the door very wide for you to be there, and you're behaving like a bad guest if you stand right in front of people and write things down.
Well, I'm also wondering if maybe there are some times when you just feel like, you know, this is not something I should write about.
Oh, yes.
This is their business. This is their culture, and it's not right for me to take this away and write it in my book.
Well, I always ask permission. I always explain what I'm doing. And as I recount in the book, there was an incident in a village, Willaura, where I was offered an opportunity to see something truly extraordinary, and I chose not to because I've become so tired of reading about people like me who invaded every crevice of an indigenous culture in order to what? Very often it was just to make the person taking notes seem more important than he or she really was.
I'd like to end with one more reading.
Sure.
If you're willing. Again, following up on some of the things that we've been talking about, and this is the one on page 167.
Sure. When I was young and just beginning to travel with indigenous people, I imagined that they saw more and heard more than I did, that they were overall simply more aware than I was. They were. If my companions and I, for example, hiking the taiga, encountered a grizzly bear feeding on a caribou carcass, I would tend to focus almost entirely on the bear. My companions would focus on the part of the world of which at that moment the bear was only a fragment. For me, the bear was a noun. For them, it was a verb. The gerund bearing. I I might not recall something we'd all seen a half hour before. A caribou footprint in soft ground at the edge of a creek, say. But my companions would remember that. And a while after our encounter with the bear, say a half mile farther on, they would notice something else. A few grizzly bear guard hairs snagged in scales of tree bark. The event I was cataloging in my mind as, quote, encounter with a tundra grizzly, they were experiencing as an immersion in the current of a river. The lesson in those experiences was not just for me to pay closer attention, but to remain in a state of suspended mental analysis, resisting the urge to define or to summarize. On occasion, I would become so wedded to my thoughts, to some cascade of ideas, that I actually lost touch with the details that my body was still gathering from a place. The ear heard the song of a vesper sparrow. The mind, pleased with itself for identifying those notes as the song of a vesper sparrow, was too occupied with its summary to notice that the ear was still offering. The mind was making no use of the body's ability to be discerning about sounds. So the mind's knowledge of the place. Remained superficial.
That was the late Barry Lopez reading from his memoir called Horizon. And that was Steve Paulson talking with him.